tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Two auditions coming up in this hour for what would be very famous Western programs geared toward adults. Before 1952, most Westerns heard on air were geared toward children, aside from the one-off movie adaptation on a program here or there. Programs like Hopalong Cassidy, The Cisco Kid, and The Lone Ranger had kids gathering around the radio, after school or at around dinner time. In this hour, we'll hear two audition programs for precedent-setting Westerns, namely Gunsmoke later on. Right now, it's The Six Shooter, starring Jimmy Stewart. The character he portrays, Britt Ponsett, was first heard on the Hollywood Star Playhouse in April of 1952 under the story The Six Shooter, and proved so popular that a series was developed around it. This pilot or audition broadcast was released for network consideration on July 15, 1953.
James Stewart as The Six Shooter. The man on the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother-of-pearl. The handle unmarked. But the gun has killed and the man has killed. People call them both the Six Shooter.
I had figured on going through Clay City. Was an hour out of my way, and I was already a day late to the Jefferson Ranch where I'd signed on for the roundup. But when Scar started limping from a loose shoe, didn't have no choice. We had to head for the nearest blacksmith shop, so we turned north.
Howdy, mister. What's the trouble?
The horse losing a shoe.
Well, let's have a look. All right, raise it up, fella. Come on, boy. Yeah.
Split, mister. He needs a new one.
Okay, boy.
Can you take care of it?
Oh, sure. Bring him over here.
Hey, what happened to Red, the fella used to own this shop?
Went to Nevada chasing silver. I bought him out.
Oh, yeah, you don't look very much like a blacksmith. Huh?
Oh, I'm stronger than I look. Heavier, too. What do you think I weigh, mister?
Oh, I don't know.
Go on, take a guess. 120? 30?
Well, no more than that.
You a betting man, mister?
Well, sometimes.
Well, I say I weigh over 130. If I don't, you get the new shoe for nothing. If I do, you pay me double. What do you say?
You got a set of scale?
Don't need no scale. What do you say, mister? Is it a bet?
Well, don't seem to be no way of proving it.
Oh, all you got to do is lift me up. You look like a man who can judge weight. What do you think?
Okay, all right, it's a bet.
All right, mister, just heist me. If you don't think I weigh more than 130, the shoe is free.
I never tried to judge a man's weight before, but all right. There we go.
Well?
Oh, I'll be dogged.
I'm packed solid, mister. Real solid.
You're packed tighter than a steer. You must weigh 150 pounds.
Yeah, you see, what did I tell you? 158. The horseshoe's gonna cost you money, mister, but you ain't the only one. Ever since I bought the shop, there ain't been a stranger come through Clay City but what he paid double for his first horseshoe. He ain't sore, mister.
No, that's a fair bet.
Sure it was. I told you I was heavier than I look. That's what folks call me, Heavy Norton. My real name's George, but everybody calls me Heavy. What's your name, mister?
Ponsett. Britt Ponsett.
Fella they call the Six Shooter? Well, doggone it. I've heard about you, mister. You was mighty quick in getting into Clay City. How'd you hear about it so fast?
How'd I hear about what?
The holdup at the Fargo station last night. Is that why you come?
No. I was headed past town. I turned off because Scar got that loose shoe.
Well, now, ain't that a coincidence? Fellow holds up the Fargo office, kills one man, maybe two, gets away with $5,000, and 12 hours later, you ride into town.
Well, they got any idea who did it?
Nope, not a single solitary one, from what I hear. Like I say, the deputy agent was dead when they found him. Other fella, Fred Wilmer, a friend of his, got shot up pretty bad. Ain't done no talking yet. Doc says maybe he never will.
Did Sheriff Schofield take out a posse?
Nope, ain't nobody to go. Most of the men signed up for the Jefferson Roundup. Left town day before yesterday. Hear the Jefferson Ranch is paying good money this year.
Yeah. You seen the sheriff this morning?
No, not lately. It might be over to his office.
I think I'll walk down that way while you're fixing up Scar.
Sure, sure, Mr. Ponsett. That's a darn good idea. Sheriff Schofield will be real glad to see you.
Couple of doors this side of the sheriff's office, I saw the Wells Fargo sign nailed up next to a window. Place wasn't locked, so I went inside. One of the chairs was upset, and there was some damp stains on the floor. The cast iron safe against the wall was standing wide open, so I kicked it shut. Went out in the back stoop. There was some more blood on the steps, and then just red mud. Right at the edge, I saw the hoof prints. They trailed off along the side of the creek. Whoever made them headed west. The horse had been wearing one shoe different from the other three. A sharp rock must have cut into it sometime or another. Not enough to split it, you understand. Just enough so that the print left a jagged line, like fancy handwriting.
Find something, Britt?
Hmm? Oh, hello, Sheriff. I was heading your way.
Yeah, I just saw Heavy. He told me you was in town. Did you find something?
I don't know. You see these hoof prints?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Don't mean nothing. Trail gives out a mile or so down a creek at the fork.
Uh-huh. Has Clay City had any other trouble lately, Ed?
No, not a bit. I guess any town's got to expect to hold up once in a while, though.
No, I heard it was a little more than that.
Yeah. That's right.
Fred Wilmer able to talk yet?
Afraid not. Doc said he'd let me know first thing he'd come around. Took him out to his ranch.
You been out there to see him since last time?
Wasn't no reason.
Well, it might be a good idea to be there, you know, just in case.
Thought maybe I ought to stick in town.
Oh, I don't think anything more is going to happen here, Ed. I'll get Scar. I'll meet you out at Fred's place.
I can handle this alone, Britt.
Oh, sure. I'll just often keep you company, Ed.
I'll meet you then.
He's all fixed up, Mr. Ponsett. Tied him up around the side so he'd be in the shade.
Thanks, Harry. Thank you.
Did you find Sheriff Schofield? I told him you was in town.
Yeah.
Did you figure out anything?
Not so far.
Oh, you will. Sheriff's a good man. Why, you and him together... You'll get whoever done it.
Well, maybe so. You're the only blacksmith around here, ain't you, Heavy?
Only one for 40 miles.
Do you ever see a horse with a shoe that's got one jagged edge, left hind leg?
A lot of shoes got jagged edges, Mr. Ponsett.
Yeah, but I'll show you what I mean. I ain't much of an artist. Now, here, it kind of looks a little like this.
Seems to me I seen a shoe like that just the other day. Oh, sure, I remember. Told him he ought to get a new one for it. Ben Schofield, that's who it was, just the other day.
Ben?
The sheriff's kid. You know him, don't you, Mr. Ponsett?
Oh, sure. I ain't seen Ben in a couple of years, though.
You wouldn't recognize him if you did. He just sort of growed up overnight.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he has. Well, that ends the first act of The Six Shooter, folks. Hope you're enjoying the show. Before we get on with it, I'd like to tell you a little bit about how I happen to be doing this program. I've been lucky enough to do quite a bit of radio acting before, but I've never had a program of my own. The right thing just didn't seem to come along, at least not until The Six Shooter. You see, I've made several stories of this kind for pictures. That is, honest, legitimate stories of the West, and I hope that this series can offer the same type of enjoyment with the same integrity. We think it's the sort of program the whole family will enjoy, and we think that the character of Britt Ponsett typifies some of the greatness that built America. We'd be pleased if you agreed with us.
And now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring Jimmy Stewart.
Sheriff Schofield was sitting on Fred Wilmer's porch swing when I got there. Doc was inside with Fred, so I squatted down on the stoop and waited. About half an hour, the doc came out and told us we could go inside and see Fred. Fred was lying on a cot, breathing hard. White cloth across his chest was stained pink. And his voice sounded like it was full of air.
We was just sitting in the express office talking. Sam and me. Didn't hear the back door open. Must have left it unlocked. Turned around and there he was, holding his gun on.
Did you get a look at him, Fred?
Handkerchief over his face, Sheriff. I couldn't see nothing. Here's the gun. He told Sam to open the safe. There wasn't nothing else he could do.
Sure, sure.
He took the money, walked over to the door.
Yeah?
Looked at us for a minute, and then shot. Didn't have no reason. He hit Sam in the face and hit me in the chest. He didn't have no reason.
Take it easy, Fred. Take it easy now.
Just like he enjoyed shooting at us. That's how it was. Like he enjoyed it.
Maybe he was scared.
Oh, he wasn't scared, Sheriff. He didn't have no reason. Thought he killed us both. Then he started down the steps. I got my hand on the shotgun and let him have it.
You hit him?
I don't know. Maybe he gave a yell and rode off.
What kind of a fellow was he? He was young, old?
I couldn't see his face. Young fellow, I'd say, though.
How young?
Oh, 17, 18, full grown.
Was he tall, short?
Medium. About the size of your kid, Ed. About that size.
Got enough for you, Ed?
Yeah, that's enough.
You think you'll get him, Brad?
Sure, Fred. Sure. Sure. Come on, Ed.
Didn't have no reason to shoot, no reason.
Let's go, Ed.
We're wasting our time, Brad. He's got a day's head start. He'd be 40 miles from here.
Well, not if he's shot up.
Now, you go on if you want to.
Well, you're the sheriff. You've got to make the arrest.
You ain't never been so particular before.
Well, maybe not, but this time I'm particular. You coming?
We don't even know where to start.
I thought along the creek. That's as good a place as any other.
It's a waste of time, Britt.
Oh, we got time to waste. Come on, let's go. We picked up the trail along the creek headed west. It wasn't hard to follow, and every once in a while we'd see a few drops of blood spattered against the shrub brush. About 10 minutes later, we came to a fork where Ed had said the trail gave out. Scar stuck his nose down into the water, and I looked around. The trail didn't give out. It turned south. I nodded in that direction. Ed didn't say a thing. Just followed. At about 5 o'clock, we stopped to eat. Ed built a fire, and I opened up a couple of cans of beans I had in my roll. Oh, you ain't hungry, Ed?
It's early for supper.
Yeah. Ed, I talked to Heavy before I went out to Fred's place. I asked him who had a horse that would leave a mark like the one we've been following.
So?
And he said Ben did. Your son, Ben. I thought you ought to know that.
A lot of horseshoes leave the same kind of mark.
Fred said it was a young fellow.
It wasn't Ben.
Where is he at?
Jefferson's ranch, working on a roundup. He left Clay City the day before yesterday. Couldn't be Ben. There's a lot of wild youngsters in these parts, but Ben's a good boy. Couldn't be him.
You sure?
That mark don't mean nothing. Plenty of horseshoes leave the same kind of mark. You know that, Britt.
You had enough to eat?
Yeah.
Come on, let's go. Thin, yellow. Not real bright, but enough so you could follow the trail. For about 3 miles, there wasn't no blood. He must have wrapped something around the wound. Wrapped it real tight. And then we found the bandage. A piece of shirt tail sopped through. For the next mile, he'd been bleeding a lot, worse than ever. He was hit pretty bad.
Looks like it.
He couldn't have gone much further because... Hold it, Scar. Ed.
Yeah.
Hold on. Over there in the gully, that cabin.
Yeah.
Whose is it?
Used to belong to Jake Levant. Died a couple of years ago. Ain't nobody living there now.
There's somebody living there.
Huh?
Out and back. There's a pony. Better go ahead on foot.
Britt?
Yeah?
We're going to take him alive, ain't we?
If we can.
We've got to take him alive, Britt.
Ben.
I don't know, Britt. Not for sure.
It could be Ben?
It could be.
Where have you been the last couple of days?
I don't know that neither. Had an argument with him 2 nights ago. He needed some money. He'd been playing poker and lost a lot.
$5,000 is a lot.
I wouldn't give him none. He got mad, said he'd get it himself. And I hit him hard across the face. I hit him twice. He started to hit me back. Then he walked out of the house. I ain't seen him since. I wish he had hit me back.
Now, we gotta get across that clearing, Ed. Over to that clump of trees.
He may see us.
Yeah, we'll have to take that chance. You ready?
Yeah.
You all right?
Sure.
I'll stay in these trees for a couple of minutes.
Okay.
And then we'll rush him. Ain't gonna be easy to take him, Ed. Now that he spotted us.
You ain't gonna kill him, Britt.
I ain't gonna let him kill me.
It ain't his fault, Britt. It's mine.
And you know that ain't so.
No, it's the truth. It's my fault.
You didn't raise him to be a killer, Ed.
Maybe I did, Britt. I was the sheriff, seeing that everybody kept close to the line, seeing that everybody lived honest, especially Ben. I broke him, Britt. Broke him like you break a wild horse. I tried to take all the fight out of him fast. You know what happens when you do that to a horse? He gets tame, but the fight's still there, and someday he turns wild again.
I'll rush him alone, Ed.
No. Stay here, Britt.
Well, Sam Norton's dead. Maybe Fred Miller, too.
Killing Ben won't bring him back. He's my son, Britt, my only son. You don't have no kids. You don't know.
I'm sorry, Ed.
No, we're going back to town.
Not without him.
We're going back. Now, you can outdraw me, Britt, but I'll still have time to get a shot off.
I'll try to get him alive, Ed. I'll try.
No, don't turn your back on me, Britt. Don't be a fool. Don't make me do it, Britt.
I wasn't being brave. I knew he wouldn't shoot. A man like Ed Schofield just don't change overnight. You can figure a man like Ed. That's what I thought, anyway. But I hadn't figured what would happen next. I haven't figured on him running out into the clearing, standing there in the moonlight, gray against the black sky.
Ben! It's me, Ben, your dad! Can you hear me, Ben? Rick Thompson's coming after you. Throw out your gun, Ben! Rick Thompson's coming! Now listen to me, Ben! It's your dad!
I saw him go down, real slow, like his legs had buckled under him. I couldn't tell how bad he'd been hit. Rolled down a gully out of range, and I crawled forward. Pushed myself past a couple of rocks and head towards the back door. The kid was in the kitchen. I couldn't see him, but I could hear him moving around, going from window to window, looking out, waiting for me. I slid past another rock. I could run for the door or wait. The kid made up a mind for me. I slipped down fast, and the bullets nicked the rocks. The kid had good hearing. He knew I was right there. I took up my gun and waited. I knew he'd get nervous first. Young fellas always do. I wasn't so young. I could wait. It was more than 5 minutes before the door started opening. And his pony knew I was coming too. He started for the horse. I aimed at his leg. For a second, he stopped moving and just hung in midair like a hawk. Then he sprawled forward out of sight behind a log. I raised up a little and hunched myself along the side of the cabin. Everything was quiet now, even his pony. The moon went behind a thick cloud, and I came around the corner of the cabin. Suddenly, the moon came out again, just in time for me to see his .45, just in time to see him coming up over the top of the log. His revolver slipped out of his fingers, and I saw him trying to reach for it again. He couldn't make it. I stood up and walked over to the log. The kid was lying face down, gasping for breath, a little short gasps. He pulled himself onto the flat of his hands and then he passed out. I turned him over with my foot and I looked at his face.
Ed? Ed?
Over here.
Where'd he get you?
In the shoulder. I'm gonna be all right. Britt, is he? Did you have to?
He ain't dead.
Thanks. I guess he didn't hear me calling to him. He didn't know who I was.
Ed.
What?
Ed, it ain't Ben.
What?
It ain't Ben, Ed.
You sure, Britt?
Yeah, this kid's got red hair.
There ain't no reason to lie to me, Britt. I ain't shot up bad.
I ain't lying. I knew it wasn't Ben while I was going up after him. I knew it.
What are you talking about?
Hey, just come to me. A man don't change overnight. Neither does a boy.
If it ain't Ben, then...
Lots of tough kids in these parts. You said so yourself.
Where do you suppose Ben is?
Where you said, Jefferson's Ranch, working in the roundup. They pay good. No. A boy don't change overnight, Ed. You able to ride back to town?
Yeah, sure. I may have to take it a little slow.
I'll get the kid.
Britt.
Yeah?
You know something, Britt? I couldn't believe it was Ben neither. Not when he shot me. I just couldn't believe it. You know that, Britt?
I know it, Ed. I know it. That was your first meeting with Britt Ponsett. I hope you'd like to meet him again every week. And I also hope you'll try our product. It's something I use myself and it's never let me down. I don't think it'd let you down either. Maybe I'm not much of a salesman, but this product I don't think needs a lot of selling. As far as I'm concerned, it sells itself. So, I'd appreciate it if you'd buy it this week and give it a try. Let me know how you like it. So long, folks. I'll be seeing you.
The Six Shooter, on Tuned 2 yesterday from July 15, 1953. Jimmy Stewart starred in that audition recording. The series would be picked up full-time in September of that year and last through June of the following year in 1954, always sustained or sponsored by the network. Apparently, at one point, the Chesterfield Cigarette Company offered to sponsor the program, but Jimmy Stewart did not want to spoil his wholesome on-screen image. You're listening to an hour of Westerns on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, in that last audition broadcast of The Six Shooter, it co-starred William Conrad and Parley Bear, two of the male leads for what would become Gunsmoke on radio, the first episode being Billy the Kid in April of 1952. But before that, there were two auditions of the program for CBS, and we'll hear number two from July 13, 1949, called Mark Dillon Goes to Gaujai. Gaujai being a city, and Howard Culver and not William Conrad playing the part of the U.S. Marshal, who was later renamed to Matt Dillon. It's Gunsmoke, the audition.
Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke. The story of the violence that moved westward with young America. The story of one man who moved with it. Mark Dillon, United States Marshal.
They all drifted here to Dodge City, one time or another. The Buffalo Killers, the Saddle Bums, the Spoilers. The end of the track and the start of the wilderness. The dumping ground of odds and ends and beginnings and leftovers. Place to stop and take the kind of pleasure you need. It's a place to pass through, and sometimes it's a place to die. My part of it was a sun-baked shack, rent paid by the United States government, and a marshal's badge, furnished free. I was at the window watching the heat clump itself with Kansas dust and roll in towards the town when the door opened.
Your name, Dillon? You the United States Marshal?
She was about 50. Poke bonnet, gingham dress, beaded Indian moccasins for shoes.
He said there was a steady marshal here in Dodge City. Been living for 6 months running.
They've been lying to you. 4 months.
They say you and your gun can break a man's heart at 50 yards.
It's on your mind.
Want you to saddle up and get down to Gougei.
Why?
My husband. He owns the White Buffalo there. Roulette, music, drinks. They say the roulette wheel's crooked.
I'll tell you what to do. There's a fella here in Dodge City named a Sin Killer Stokes. Saves souls by the bushel. Trumpet playing and everything. You tell Sin Killer about your husband.
In Gougei, they kill a man who runs a crooked wheel. I don't want my husband dead.
Well, look, ma'am, I don't even
Abigail
know
Abigail Contuarius. That's my name.
Yeah, well, Mrs. Contuarius, you don't need a marshal. You need an honest husband.
He's no more crooked than you are. If he was, I wouldn't take none of his money.
Sure.
Don't sure me, Marshal. Money don't just mean money to me. It means books for Indian kids and writing stuff. Slates and all.
Oh, a missionary.
Huh, me? With a gambler and a philanderer and a toper for a husband? I teach Indian kids. Teach them to behave and a little learning, that's all.
Well, that's good work, ma'am. These towns could use more people like you.
Don't sniff around me. You marshals are supposed to mean law and order and the rights of decent people. Gougei could use some of that. You coming, or do I have to ride my mule some more?
Ride it back to Gougei. I'll be along.
Make it soon, Marshal. There'll be a convulsion down there if you don't.
It was night when the town of Gougei loomed out of the wilderness and beckoned to me like a painted, skinny hag. If Dodge City had a sister, this was it. I rode up to the White Buffalo, started to tie my horse to a hitching post, whittled to the shape of a Pawnee girl, when suddenly the gun in my back told me I wasn't alone.
You won't like it here in Gougei, Marshal. Pretty as it is, you won't like it.
No?
No. Don't turn around, Marshal. I'm shy, I'm modest, I embarrass easy. Isn't that so, Harold? See? Harold thinks it's so. Harold had his tongue clipped. Apaches.
Maybe it was too long.
It's not a genteel thing to say to Harold, Marshal. He takes offense easy.
I'm new here. Back in Dodge City, the etiquette's a little more formal.
Then go back to Dodge. We're happy here in Gougei, like little birds. You could spoil it.
I was invited. Special invitation.
Yeah? Well, the dance is over. Now, Harold, now! I told you wouldn't like it in Gougei, Marshal.
When I opened my eyes, I was in Gougei's dirt. I knew I'd never forget that voice and that crazy giggle. I picked myself up and waited till the town stopped its dizzy dance. On its third time around, I spotted a horse trough and stuck my head in it to get rid of the blood on my face. I finally pushed my bones through the swinging doors of the White Buffalo. A girl leaned against the bar, strumming a guitar. Black hair, slender. Something profane and exquisite was distilled into her features. She watched me across the room. And when she spoke, it was as if she hadn't quit singing.
Buenas noches, chico.
Evening.
Oh, a marshal. A marshal with a cup face and a muddy badge. You buy girls drinks, Marshal?
Here's a buck. Buy yourself one. Where can I find the owner?
Over there by the poker table.
Which one?
The goatee and pompadour.
Thanks.
Come back to me, chico. They call me Tamar.
Tamar, huh? Maybe I will. Your name, Contuarius?
Si. Oh, the marshal from Dodge City. You already have the look of a large headache, senor.
Yeah? Someone else besides you and your wife was expecting me.
Muy mal. Too bad.
It wasn't good.
No, I see. But I am glad you have come, senor marshal. Come, look around. See my place. I have a magnificent establishment here.
Looks like the take's plenty.
No. Every day my wheel loses money. Somebody is swindling me. This somebody, I swear it, I will kill you dead.
Your wife hinted it might be you who'd be killed dead.
No one has killed me yet. This I tell myself and it makes me happy.
Yeah. Well, let's have a look at this wheel of yours.
Of course. Follow me. you see, I have also Pharaoh, Dive, Girl, Dancing Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And the finest little west of the Mississippi.
Number 12. Red Page, 12 Page.
Roger Spinner.
I will introduce you to him. Jack.
Senor.
Un momento. William will take your place.
Yes, Mr. Contreras.
Greg Hagen, the best croupier in the territory. Greg, I want you to meet Mark Dillon, Marshal of the United States of America.
I've heard your name, Dillon. You're from Dodge City.
Lately from there. Go count your chips, Contreras. Hagen and I want to talk.
Yeah, I leave you gentlemen alone.
We want to talk, Marshal?
Yeah. Rumor has it the wheel's rigged.
Mrs. Contreras tell you to ask?
Maybe. Well, is it?
Look, Marshal, Contreras is my friend.
Still, a croupier's in a mighty good spot to double-cross the house.
Marshal, I already told you, Contreras is my friend.
Sorry, I made a mistake. No hard feelings?
Plenty hard feelings. I think I like it better back at the table. Look around yourself, Marshal.
So, I did. Mostly, I hung around the roulette table. As far as I could see, the wheel was given the house and the customers an even break. Just about the time I was ready to go out and find Contreras again, two new players wandered up to the crowded table. One in a beaded jacket, the other a silent hulk of a man. They didn't seem to be together or even know each other. On the next spin, the ball fell into 29, bounced out, rolled around 13, and finally settled in 00. Just as it did, beaded jacket reached out and put a $100 bill on 00. Greg Hagen, the croupier, looked up.
I'm sorry, mister. You placed your bet after the ball settled. The house can't accept it.
I had that $100 down before you started to spin. Ask anybody. I had it down. I want to chance the people. I'm telling you, I had it down.
Look, mister, your bet wasn't legitimate. The house recommends you take your money and get out.
He did. Fast. Too fast. In another second, I knew the reason why. When Beaded Jacket picked up the bill, there was a blue chip under it on 00, and the house paid off to the silent hulk. I knew I'd heard Beaded Jacket's voice before. When I first hit town, so I moved fast. I got out of the casino just in time to see Beaded Jacket disappear around the corner. I took it easy. Polite and easy. The bullet nubbed the dust at my feet. I ducked into the shadows and whipped out my guns. The flash had come from a narrow passageway between two buildings.
I'm in this alley, Marshal. On in and get me.
Wait right there.
I'm waiting. I'll strike a match. I want to see your face when it happens to you.
Try me.
No. You shoot first. You'll miss, you know that, Marshal. But I won't, because your gun flash will tell me where you are.
Real clever. That was clever what you did back at the White Buffalo. You and your friend. That was Harold, huh? The giggle with the talent for pistol whipping?
Tell me all about it.
You throw down a $100 bill with a blue chip underneath it after the ball drops. You get yourself thrown out. Harold, who never made a bet at all, collects 35-1.
Oh, did Harold do that? Did you do that, Harold?
And there he was, framed in the entrance of the alley. I was caught between him. Beaded Jacket and a mute called Harold. The big guns in Harold's hands turned over and over. His face held all the evil in the world.
You're right, Harold. Take him.
He was shooting waist high along the wall, and he was getting close. There was only one thing to do, and I couldn't miss.
Oh! You shot Harold, Marshal. That was your mistake.
When I opened my eyes, I was in a place I'd never been before, and a cottonwood clearing. I eased the wound in my shoulder. From across a smoldering campfire, I saw her. Tamar. The morning sun lighted up the features of a man at her feet. Señor Rafael Ramon José Contreras. The bullet hole in his forehead gave him an extra flourish. Now it was Señor Rafael Ramon José Contreras, deceased. And the girl named Tamar was singing a love song. When they pinned the marshal's badge on me, they said I had a job to do. This morning, my job was a man with a bullet hole in his forehead and a marshal with a wound in his shoulder. The dead man was Rafael Ramon José Contreras, and the marshal was me. And there was a girl named Tamar.
You have slept long, Chico, without dreams.
How do you know there were no dreams, Tamar?
Because I saw Dave give you a little piece of himself. And then right away on his desk.
Yeah, I'm lucky. How did I get here?
Senor Contrarias and I brought you here. The wagon over there in the burrow. You are muy lucky, Chico. The bullet was for your heart. But it sent itself in your shoulder. It was not your time to die.
But it was Contrarius's time to die, huh?
Perhaps his grave has been empty too long.
And you knew him well?
Si. I knew him.
Well enough to kill him?
I did not kill him. Senor Contrarius was my protector.
What did he protect you from? Himself?
I like your mouth better when it is gentle, Chico.
Then who did kill him?
I do not know. While we were here trying to help you, a bullet came out of the darkness and found Contrarius.
How come you picked this place?
It is a place, Senor Contrarius, and I knew well.
Oh, like that, huh?
It is a place where Senor Booth would not look for you if he knew you were still alive.
Booth? So that's his name, the man in the beaded jacket. How come he didn't finish me?
When we heard the shot, Senor Contrarius and I ran out of the White Buffalo. I persuaded Senor Booth that you were good.
Booth persuades easy.
He persuades easy for Tomas. The shots were heard, people came. Senor Booth does not like too much attention.
Well, he's going to get all of mine, Tamar. Undivided.
I don't advise it, Chico. If you live, go back to Dodge City. If you die, die in Dodge City. Oh, wait. The Senor Contrarius in the burro car.
Where is he? Answer me, woman. Answer me.
There, senor. Behind the marshal.
The marshal? Hello, marshal. They said you'd been killed. Get up, Contrarius. Get up.
He's dead, ma'am.
Oh. Shouldn't be lying here on the cold ground.
I'll lift him up into the car.
I will help you, senora.
If you so much as touch him, I'll kill you. Come along.
You're pretty strong to lift him yourself.
I've done it before. You're hurt, Marshal?
I'll be all right.
You can come too if you want. Take you back to town.
Look, ma'am, I'm sorry about...
Sorry? Huh. You should never have left Dodge City. All it got me was a dead husband. Get in.
Somewhere on that long wagon ride back to town, Mrs. Contrarius squeezed a tear onto her cheek. Just one tear. But for her, it was a major emotion. The sun was doing its best to char the wood frame buildings when we hit Gaujai. She drove past the White Buffalo to the far edge of town, pulled up at a tar paper shack.
Oh! Here we are, Marshal.
Why bring me here? Just so I could pick my own gutter? Why didn't you leave me in the cottonwoods to die?
That door. That shack door right over there. Try it.
All right, ma'am.
Get in.
Yeah?
Well, Marshal, I heard you were dead. Hey, you hurt.
Come on in.
Thanks.
Who sent you here?
Mrs. Contrarius.
Huh? Better cut away that shirt.
Why'd she send me here, Greg?
Not neat, Marshal. Not neat at all.
Right here, Greg.
Lie still. I'll get some sense.
You haven't answered my question.
I do things with my hands, Marshal. Spin roulette with you. Make strike bullets between spins.
You a doc?
Yeah, I'm a doc. Was. Had a shingle. Nice, shiny one. And they said I couldn't have it anymore. Malpractice, they said it. What you looking at?
That roulette wheel on the table over there. Don't you get enough practice at the White Buffalo?
Don't strain yourself, Marshal.
I won't. I'm not too much alive. But I once knew a croupier clever enough to spin the wheel so that the ball would drop in any slot he wanted.
That'd be pretty hard to prove, wouldn't it, Marshal?
Yeah, it would.
Now, you want that wound fixed?
Uh-huh. Now bite my lip real hard.
Do that, Marshal. It's a nice pose.
I bit my lip, but all I got was a pain in my mouth. And I didn't need that. There was enough pain. It started when Greg put a scalpel against my shoulder, and it went on from there. It went on for a long time. Finally, everything gathered into focus.
Keep that bandage dry, Marshal. You'll be all right.
Thanks, Doc. What's your fee?
This bullet, the one I took out of you. I want it as a souvenir of the time I saved a Marshal's life.
You're welcome to it. Just tell me this. You know a girl named Tamar?
Girl in the Bible had that name.
Contrarius knew a girl named Tamar. Now he's dead.
Contrarius dead? Well, I suppose somebody wanted him dead.
Yeah. But stick around. I may want to talk to you again later.
Always a pleasure, Marshal. I'll be around. What are your plans?
I'm going to take a killer.
With your shooting arm in a sling? I don't think so.
I'll gamble on it, Greg. Want odds? I got up and left Greg's shack. Taking a killer needed a little preparation. And right now, preparation meant talking to Mrs. Contrarius. But something stopped me. It was the funeral Mrs. Contrarius was celebrating for her dearly departed. Somewhere, she'd found a black ostrich plume and pinned it to the donkey's head. The cart she always used was draped in banners of black silk that looked suspiciously like the shreds of an elegant petticoat. Three grinning Indian kids, maybe 8 years old, were beating the drum, clapping the cymbal, playing a flute. The rear of the parade was brought up by a bunch of other Indian kids, looking solemn because their new shoes hurt. And on the cart, in an open pine box, lay Senor Contrarius. I looked inside. The senor was still very aristocratic. I looked again, closer. Then I knew I just had to talk to Mrs. Contrarius. It was maybe an hour later when she drove up to the White Buffalo alone, her cart empty and stripped of the banners. She looked uncomfortable in her black cotton.
Send me your good arm, Marshal. I don't want to rip this dress.
Yes, ma'am. There you are. Nice funeral, ma'am.
Thanks, Marshal. Kids behaved real nice, didn't they?
Yeah. You done a good job on them, ma'am.
Thanks. You haven't been very successful, have you, Marshal?
Maybe that's your fault. Maybe you haven't told me enough.
About what?
About Tamar and your husband, for instance.
What about Tamar and my husband?
This about them, ma'am. They were real good friends. That could be a reason for you to kill your husband.
Could, Marshal, but it wasn't. Maybe he was killed because he found out who was cheating this wheel and you didn't.
But I did.
Then why don't you take him?
You want me to take Greg Hagen?
Greg Hagen? I don't believe it. He's an honest man, as honest as you are, Marshal. Can you prove what you're saying?
I don't know. But I'm sticking around to see if I can. And I'm sticking around to see if I can bring in a killer.
Who is it?
Maybe you. Maybe Greg. Maybe Booth, the man in the beaded jacket. Maybe even the girl named Tamar.
Then come on in and have a drink. You look peaked.
I followed her into the casino. In an hour, it began to fill up. I hid myself behind the stairs where I had a clear view of the roulette table and waited. About 8, she walked through the door. Tamar. Tamar in a dress of red. Tamar buckled with silver. She strolled over to the table and put some chips on the black as Greg spun. There was no sign of recognition between them.
Seven black. Seven pays black.
Hey, pays. I was on.
Place your bet.
On the next spin, Tamar won again. Then she lost. She doubled her bets and won more times than she lost. After a while, she stopped playing colors and switched to single numbers. 35-1. She kept on winning about 1 out of 4. In an hour, there was roughly $20,000 stacked in front of her. And in an hour, there wasn't any doubt they were a team, and Greg was spinning a crooked wheel.
13 black. 13 pays, black pays.
Well, you're lucky. You're very lucky tonight, Tamar.
Tonight, senora. I am always lucky at your tables, no?
Not as lucky as tonight. Sorry, men, this is a private table from now on. You all move over to the second table, right over there.
Well, looks to me like
Doc.
Private table, Senora?
Yes, just you and this gentleman.
Mrs. Confarius was playing it smart. The man she thumbed at over her shoulder was Booth in his beaded jacket. I could have made my move then, but I decided to wait for the piece to play itself out. Mrs. Confarius was getting them all together, and this show was too good to spoil. Greg, Booth, and Tamar.
This is my last spin.
That's all right, Tamar. All Mr. Booth wants is just one spin. Right, Mr. Booth?
Yeah, just one spin. With a little lady.
But I was...
Mr. Booth, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it is all right. Spin the wheel, Greg.
We'll spin. Once more.
Bueno. All of my money on number one.
Number one, huh? That's a good number. Number one. I'll take 10,000 in gold on number one.
Oh, that's all.
Three red. Three pays, red pays.
Greg, well, you double-crossed me.
I double-crossed you.
It don't matter, Tamar.
Greg didn't have a chance. The knife he tried to draw was hammered back by the bullets from Booth's gun. They tore through his hand and across his chest. Suddenly, his face changed. He looked young and hurt and ashamed of the blood that he couldn't hold back. Booth held his guns like they were dogs on a leash that could snap easy.
Keep back, all of you. Marshal, you can quit playing possum now. It'd make me real happy if you try to follow us. Pick up the money and let's go, Tamar. Nobody move. Nobody move.
You let him get away, Marshal.
I don't think so, ma'am. He'll be wanting to finish me off. I'm going to give him his chance. I could have looked for him in a lot of places. But he was with Tamar. That narrowed it down. There was only one place to look. It was dawn when I found him, resting easy in the cottonwood clearing.
I knew you'd have to come after me, Marshal. You know, you're funnier than an actor I saw once in Dodge. You're much funnier.
Maybe you laugh too easy, Booth. Like you kill too easy.
Marshal, with his gun arm in a sling, chasing a killer.
Go away, Marshal. Go away while there is still time.
I got nothing but time. I'll wait.
That's where you're wrong, Marshal. You got no time at all.
Yeah?
Go! Chico, this I do not believe. It is impossible that someone could shoot faster than Senor Booth. With your left hand. Oh, Chico. You are so very quick with your gun. I like that about a man.
Take it easy, Tamar. Come on, let's go.
Go? Oh, not now, Marshal. There is time. Sit here next to Tamar.
Like this? You know what I think?
Oh, Chico. Chico, do not talk now.
I think you had a great thing with Greg. He could put that ball in any number you bet on. Only that wasn't enough for you.
Oh, but it does not matter now, Carito.
You thought you could double your profits by throwing in with Booth. Maybe you were going to double-cross him, too. Like you double-crossed Confarius and Greg.
Oh, do not worry about it, Chico. The money is yours, too.
It belongs to Mrs. Confarius. And that's who's going to get it.
What? What are you talking about?
Take your choice. Come back with me to the jail in Gaujai, or I'll turn you over to Mrs. Contuarius. And I don't think she could stand having you alive.
Why, you... Oh, Chico, surely. Surely you are playing with me, huh?
You murdered a man, Tamar.
Chico!
You killed Contuarius.
Chico, I told you the shot that killed Contuarius came from the woods in back of the clearing.
Much closer than that. From your gun, Tamar. Contuarius had powder burns on his forehead, so that shot was fired from up close. I saw that when I looked into his coffin. Powder burns from your gun, Tamar.
We will go away together, you and I, Chico. Listen to me, Chico.
Contuarius found out you were double-crossing him with Greg, didn't he?
Listen to me.
Let's go, Tamar.
Listen to me, Chico. There is plenty of money, yours and mine. Listen to me, Chico.
She
put her arms around my neck and her lips close to my ear. And for a long time, for a long, long time, first in English, then in Spanish, then in Cherokee, and in the language I couldn't recognize, she whispered at me every foul name in the book. She was talented. She didn't repeat herself once. Tamar didn't understand that a marshal had a job to do, and that the job got done. On the way back to Dodge City, I came across a cottonwood clearing I'd never noticed before. I rode down into it. A small animal scurried off a log and lost itself in the shadows. Then I was alone. For a time after that, for a long time after that, I thought about Tamar. They'd given her her guitar, but I knew she wouldn't be singing much longer. The rest of the way home, the country was dust. It got inside of my mouth, and it stayed there.
Gunsmoke. On Tuned To Yesterday, the audition broadcast from July 13, 1949 on CBS. The series would be a regular feature of CBS Radio, setting the bar very high for adult westerns on radio and later on television, where Gunsmoke director Norman McDonnell headed up that production with James Arness in the title role on the small screen. The radio series would come to an end in June of 1961. And that brings to a close this hour of Western Auditions on Tuned To Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.